Accession number 30632, Mr. John Langford, Rail 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Langford?
2nd of November 1921.
And where?
At the place called Nordenburg, N-O-R-D-E-R-G.
D-E-R-G,
Nordenburg, which was then part of Germany, East Prussia, as the only child of my father, Louis Lehmann.
And that was the family name, wasn't it? You were born Erwin Lehmann.
Absolutely.
And can you tell us a bit about the family background? Because you were a Jewish family, weren't
yes,
you?
But yes.
Can you tell us a bit about
my
what
grandfather
you know?
Was already born in Germany. And my father was born in 1888, so I suppose his father must have been born so in 1860, something like that. I haven't got the exact date of birth. All I know is he died the day war broke out. That was the last Red Cross letter I received that they buried my grandfather.
Now, what did he do for a living? What, tell us a bit
farming,
about
farming. Well, in those days, farming and pub and that went together. And they were also involved in breeding horses and cattle. They had a few hundred acres of land, and he had five sons and two daughters, and they were all involved in that business.
And one of them was your father?
The oldest was my father.
And what? How did the family go on? I mean, how did your father do? Well, did he have his own farm, or did he work in the family?
In 1914, somebody who obviously I didn't know wasn't alive then. Somebody moved from Nordenburg, my birthplace, to Glasgow, where he got married. But by the outbreak of the war, he hadn't had enough money to pay for his naturalization papers. And he, because he was of German origin, and his wife was 16 or 18 months old when she arrived in this country from Latvia, I believe it was. They were deported to Germany.
This is 1914?
14. Or 14, 15, during the war years. My father and he became friends after the war. And he had already, the other guy had already bought a farm. And my father's farm was next door. So the next door farmers, and they're great friends. And they decided in 1924 to go back to Glasgow. Her family was Edinburgh-based. They used to come over, and the service school that I was pushed in the same pram as all their daughters and whatever. And they were very good to me. I was the first refugee into their...
Hang on, well, that's many years. You didn't go then, did
no,
you?
No.
So this friend of your father moved back to Glasgow, to Scotland.
That's right.
Now, how was your father's business going?
Quite well. I mean, there were no fortunes to be made in those days. As farmers here don't make greatest fortunes. But unfortunately, he lost his wife. My mother died when I was 7.5 years of age. And he never remarried. But by then, he had his own farm, his own house, his own land. Very highly respected for all sorts of reasons, including that he's got the Iron Cross from the First World War.
Did he ever talk about his war?
Yes, so much so that we as children said, can't be change the subject. And I'm afraid when I go on to talk to my kids, but they plead with me, tell us more. So I don't know the difference between...
So who did he serve with, the infantry or...?
The German infantry, oh my goodness, 45th Regiment.
The 45th?
Black Hussars, I think they were called.
The cavalry or infantry?
Well, they were, I don't know, being a farmer, it might have been cavalry, I'm not too sure. But I know it was 45th Regiment.
And did he ever speak about his service? Was he on the Eastern Front or the Western?
He was on both fronts.
Did it make an impact? What did he tell you? Or what kind of thing?
Well,
obviously, you don't remember.
He would have told me if I was interested, but I didn't know much about war, you know.
But he'd been awarded the Iron Cross, so he'd done reason.
So did he, and four brothers were all in the army.
Now, so you were being brought up on the farm in Nordenburg, fairly well off, not rich.
I would say yes. We had a car towards the end and owned the property, and I don't know. I never looked at his bank statement, but yes, I think he was quite comfortable.
Just comfortable. Now, what about how Jewish in the sense of orthodoxy, liberal orthodox?
Well, my grandparents were rather orthodox, which was usual. The next generation less, and so it deteriorated. Today we are not really more than Jewish by name. We're not really orthodox.
At all, right.
No.
What were you brought up as, sort of?
No, well, I was bar mitzvah, so you heard that word. I've been that. I went to normal school.
So it was more cultural than
absolutely
religious.
Absolutely, yes.
What do you remember of your education?
Well, I went to a normal school to start with, and then transferred to a private school, which I never understand. The public school in other countries don't mean what other public schools are here. And I was there till my 10th or 11th year, and I was thrown out because of being Jewish.
That would be around about 1933.
33, something like
now,
that.
Now, before we come to that, that's obviously important. How did you do at school? What did you like? What were you good at?
I was an average schoolboy, you know, naughty like everybody else.
Any subjects you liked or didn't like any of them?
I was active in sport. At the age of 11, I went to private school where there were six quinta quarta inter tertia there, and I learned the second language, French, but I dare not repeat the word. Our teacher knew it because she was an East Prussian who spoke with a very broad dialect. So, no, I took subjects. I wasn't an outstanding scholar.
So nothing you're particularly interested in and nothing you're particularly bad at?
No.
And what about sport? How important was sport to you?
Well, it was important as far as the school was concerned. They were very sport-minded. We had sport classes, sport teacher. And I played in handball. I think handball was more important to us than football. I was never a good swimmer, but I was a good ice skater. There was a river that went through our land, which I come to later. I was nothing outstanding. I was just a good, well-behaved, middle-class boy.
Now, before Hitler came to power in 1933,
yes.
Were you aware of any anti-Semitism in your local community? This is before Hitler.
No, I don't think so.
So it was all right.
My father was very well in with all the other locals because this was a small town of 3,000 inhabitants. You were either accepted or you went. And I was pleased to tell you he was very much accepted.
Now, after Hitler came to power, what were the effects of the Nazis coming to power in 1933?
Well, the men were forced to join the party. Either the Yellow, the SA, or the SS, whichever. And I was thrown out of school the first year that Hitler was in power.
Now, why were you thrown out?
Because of my Jewishness, Jewish background. They would not educate Jewish children.
And that was absolutely blatant. They just said, you know.
Oh, that was a general, yeah. There were a few more Jewish children in our school. But we were all treated the same way out. And I think I must have been 13, which would have been 1934. I think that's more or less right. I have some school certificates.
It was 34 when you left that school.
I think it was 34, yeah.
So just shortly, a year after Hitler came to power.
That's right, yes.
Now, what about, was there any more sign of anti-Semitism on the streets of your small town, or was it still?
Not until November the 10th, 1938.
So what were you doing in between? So you left school in 1934. Did you go to a Jewish school? Or?
No, normal school. There were no Jewish schools at the time.
So where did you left the private school and you went?
I lived with my grandparents for 7 years because my mother died and my father closed the house. And I went to live with my grandparents. We all got very spoiled.
Now, where were they living?
In a place called Schlossberg, S-C-H-L-O-S-S. Berg, the town 20 kilometers from where we lived.
And you went to live there in what year?
Well, I came back. No, yes, I can tell you. I know I was back home in 1935. So that this was, my mother died in 29. So I was immediately taken to my grandparents to be, and I couldn't, I don't know whether I went to school there.
Well, that's when you went to the private school, presumably.
That's right, yes.
Now, what did you do when you left that school? Where did you go?
Went around with uncles. My father had four brothers, and we were all children of all of them. You know, we were very close in the family.
So you didn't go back, once you were evicted from school, you didn't go back to school?
No.
There was no other school?
I went back to my hometown in January 1935.
But not to school.
That was not to school.
So what were you going to do?
I went there was a very nice, well, my intention was to become a veterinary surgeon, because my father being involved with horses and that. There was a very large, large in circumstance of the time, warehouse, store like Selfridges, but smaller, of course. And they would employ children whose parents were drapers. But as my father was a friend of the owner, they took me in as an apprentice.
Apprentice veterinary surgeon?
No. In the fashion house.
Ah, so not getting you far towards being a surgeon. So what was the work like in the fashion house?
Well, I was the youngest. I had to be there at 7:30 in the morning to open the sun blinds. I earned 15 marks a month. And my father paid 90 marks for my digs. So there was no profit for my father in there.
And what were you doing in the fashion house? I mean,
I learned the trade.
Which is?
The textiles. 3 months, I think it started 3 months in bedding and finished off in carpets on the top floor. But the problem, because you could not get an employment unless you had an apprenticeship served. And so it was my interest too. And then suddenly on November the 10th,
that's all ended. Yeah. Now what happened on Kristallnacht as far as you're concerned?
I stayed at that time with two uncles in a small place called Zillen, S-Z-I-L-L-E-N.
S-Z-I-L-L-E-N. Now, is this where the draper's store was?
They had their own draper's store. No, the draper's store where I worked was in Tilsit. Tilsit.
And where were you? And you were living in nearby, were you?
With them.
So what happened on Kristallnacht then?
Well, we were all arrested.
But tell, what do you remember of it? I mean, what?
Yeah, we were all arrested by local SS and.
But what happened?
Party members taken to a Zuchthaus. I don't know what the relationship. Security.
What I mean is by what happened it. What I'm trying is when the SS arrived. I mean, what happened? They arrived at your
house, smashed up everything that was smashable.
How many of them?
I don't know.
Was it the SS or the SA?
That was the SS. I think. Yes.
And how did they treat you as they smashed up the house?
They smashed. That's the same as they smashed the furniture.
Roughly?
Very rough. And I was the youngest, and I got an honorary job of dishing out toilet paper in the prison, because I was the youngest person there.
Now, what happened on Kristallnacht? So you were arrested at home on Kristallnacht?
Well, no, I was with my two uncles in Zillen. They were also drapers.
You weren't actually at home or
no,
at
no.
And this was on the
on the night of the 10th of November.
And
my father heard where I was.
What was it like in the prison? You were in the prison at Zillen, were you?
The prison was in Ragnit, near Tilsit. Tilsit Ragnit. There was the River Memel, which divided Lithuania from Germany. but it was a rough prison.
And what were conditions like in the prison?
Well, we got hurt and hit and shouted at and nothing different to everybody else who was involved in that.
Were you frightened?
Inexperienced, no.
So what happened next? How long were you in before your father found where you were?
I was in it for, must have been 2 or 3 weeks, during which time my father got an extension. My father got permission to go back to our hometown, and because he served in the First World War, managed to speak to somebody who had the authority to let me out of prison. Provided I left Germany within 30 days. And this was the 30th of November. And I left Germany on the 3rd of January with the Kindertransport.
Now, so you got out?
I got out.
And
no money, no nothing, no nothing.
Who organized? Tell me how your.
Well, the Kindertransport was a movement of the British Jewish community, I think. And they got government permission to allow so many children in between the ages of 11 to 17, I think it was.
Kinder means children, isn't
children,
it?
Children, that's right.
And so how did you have to prepare for this in any way? Or what did you have to do?
No, no. My father and one of my aunts came with me by train from East Prussia to Berlin, where this transport started. And my father's last words to me were, the further away from Germany, the safer you will be. And there were two trains at that station. One went to Hoek of Holland to go transferred by boat to UK, and the other one went to, I think, Amsterdam or one of the Hollandish places. So I just chose to go to England without any reason. I'm just a duck.
Was there any trouble on the way out?
Yes, and we got beaten up.
Where? What happened?
On a train. We had to go through the Polish corridor, which was a part of Germany which was given to the Poles after the First World War, in order that they had access to waters. And that's where Gdansk started. So during the night, there was no sleeping facilities or anything. The guards came in and made us open our suitcase. I had one little suitcase, German money, for which I got 8 pence halfpenny, for which I bought the first stamp to write to my friends in Glasgow who I am and why I'm here.
So these were German soldiers or frontier?
Oh, yes.
And they basically stopped. Did they steal everything or? Well, just examine.
Well, there was nothing to see. We had nothing. We had no valuables.
But they beat you up?
Yes.
How badly?
Bad enough to
cut some bruises.
I mean, I've overcome it, as you see, but.
But it was bad at the time?
It was awful, yes.
So what happened next? Then they let you go?
They let me off the train in Berlin, and as I say, there were two other trains on platforms, one to Hoek of Holland and one to Amsterdam or somewhere. And my father's words were, the further away from Germany, the better. And although I perhaps didn't know where Hoek of Holland was at the time, I said, this will do. And my father was then 51 years of age, and I look upon him now as an old man. Well, of course, he suffered much more than I as a kid of 17. To me, this was all new. I wasn't aware how serious it would become.
You weren't that worried then?
Well, I was worried, I suppose, but I didn't understand the happenings.
Now, what happened? So you sailed to England. Where did you land?
Dovercourt. Harwich at the camp.
The Dovercourt camp?
Yes.
There is it?
Yes.
So you were held in there at first, were you?
I was there.
Now, what was it like? What was your first impression of
I know one thing. It was raining, cold and horrible, and I had a toothache. And I was taken to a dentist, and within 5 minutes he pulled two teeth out. Which other told me that is the habit. If you have a toothache, you've got your two teeth to be pulled out. And I wrote a letter to the man who I mentioned earlier, who went to live in Scotland before the turn of the century. And they sent me confirmation. Yes, and we were...
Now, these aren't relatives. They're family friends. Is that
they're
right?
They're family friends. And we were visited by people, English people, marched around this circus like a stable, and they say, I'll have him and I'll have her. But then it came to me. I was the oldest there. And coming from where I came, Germany, East Prussia, I wore breeches, trousers, and riding boots because of the weather conditions. And I could have well been SS man or as one thing. So nobody wanted me.
You looked I was older unwanted. And much more German.
Yes, I was unwanted. Until 48 hours later, I had this letter from Jablonski inviting me to come and stay with him.
That's from your friend. Now, what were conditions like in Dover Court Camp before you left? I know you were only there a couple of days.
The whiskey, I don't know. It was, look, after Germany, we felt safe again, but we knew we would never see our families again. And we didn't. Nobody saw them. This was children's transport. The parents were then shipped to some concentration camp.
But what were the conditions like in the camp? I mean, were they reasonable?
Acceptable.
Food and accommodation?
I suppose so. I've never complained, so...
Now, what subsequently happened to your family? I mean, I don't know how many...
Right. I was in contact with my family through the Red Cross, and we were supposed to go, a family of 22 members, to Australia sheep farming. That was...
That was a plan.
Planned by the British Jewish... What were they called in those? In Bloomsbury House, what were they?
I don't know. But it's the main Jewish refugee organisation.
Yes.
So they planned to get them out of Germany and for them to emigrate to Australia.
And then the war came, unfortunately, before the other arrangements were completed. And
do you know what happened to them? I know it's
no idea. But what happened to the family? Well, they stayed in Germany until... My grandfather died on the day the war broke out. My grandmother of 82 and one of her sons were put into concentration camp, and we were the last two to be gassed on May the 5th, 1945. That proof I've had.
What about the others, your father?
My father wrote me a letter saying they were going to leave the hometown. He didn't tell me this. I don't know where I heard it. They were shipped to Kiev Minsk or Kiev in Russia, where they were gassed and killed, all of them.
So none of these, was it 22, none of them survived?
No. Well, there were two younger cousins who came to Glasgow. They were 11 and 12 years of age.
But everyone who stayed behind was killed?
Yes.
In the extermination program.
That's right.
Right, now, how did you get to Glasgow? Because, I mean...
I was on a transport train to Liverpool from Dover Court to Liverpool Street Station. And there was handed over a little boy of 8 or 9 with papers, and I was to guard him to hand him over to somebody who would meet us at Glasgow Station. I don't know his name, but we were taken by car. And if I remember, it was the first Rolls Royce I'd ever seen.
The first?
Rolls Royce. By a lady from the committee to Bloomsbury House to get our train ticket and whatever. And she didn't speak a word of German, I didn't speak a word of English. But we made ourselves understood and much. She said, this is an expensive area, and I thought it was Bond Street. And we were taken to catch the coronation train at 1:30, leaving Houston, arriving in Glasgow at 8 o'clock. And it left at 1:30, and it arrived at 8 o'clock. And there on the platform, which was a miserable night, there on the platform were Mr. and Mrs. Oblonsky, and I heard somebody shout, that is Lewis's son, I can recognize him. I looked like my father, so I was told. And they came and kissed and cuddled me and took me to their home.
Now, they obviously made, it was a very friendly and warm reception.
Oh, very emotional, yes, yes. Well, friendship in those days meant an awful lot, I think. And they'd gone through a lot.
Now, so what happened? I mean, you were living with them, were you?
In at number 7 Firwood Drive, Kings Park, Glasgow, S4.
And how did you find life in England? Oh, well, Scotland.
Well, yes, well, he was the manager of his brother-in-law's tea plantation. They were blending teas, which were sold in shops. I think it was called Sunkis tea, S-U-N-K-I-S. And I was to be trained as a tea taster. But as such, you're not allowed to eat until your job is finished, which was 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And a young lad of 17 couldn't wait till 2 o'clock, so I chucked that, and that wasn't meant for me.
So you didn't last long at that?
No, I couldn't. I was probably 4 or 5. The only thing that is outstanding is that I learned to speak English in the Scottish tea place. That was not the best location to pick up nice words.
Did you have any problems learning to speak English? I mean,
the people we met were all charming, helpful, middle-aged to elderly people who had pity with us. I met only wonderful people.
But what, I mean, did you have trouble learning English? I mean, were you good
at it? It came naturally. Well, if nobody could speak your language, and I made a few mistakes as well, I can tell you then, you would have to switch that off. I can't repeat it. But it was English. And then when...
You mean you used swear words? You'd learned swear
which
words?
Which I never used since then. Not that particular word.
You didn't know what it meant?
No, it was a straightforward translation from German to English, but it had a completely different meaning in German as it had in English. But whoever heard it thought I was speaking English and killed himself laughing.
Now, what sort of... You had a good reception from local people. Was there any anti-Semitism? I mean, because there was plenty of anti-Semitism.
Well, I would
in
say
England,
where there are Jews, there's anti-Semitism. That's broadly speaking. But I never came across any.
So... You were generally warmly received.
Absolutely.
Now, so after you'd worked as a tea taster for a few weeks, yes. What did you do next?
Well, what did I do next? I applied for a job on a farm in Strathaven. You say Strathaven, with a family called Warner, to learn some more farming, because we were meant to go to Australia to do farming.
Was this as a farm labourer or as a trainee farmer? If you see the difference.
Everything from sun to labour. I was just accepted by this family, and the neighbouring farmers used to come. I was a rarity.
And so this was at
Strathaven. Strathaven. Strathaven.
And how did that go?
It went very well. I was accepted, and I was working hard from 5 in the morning to milking cows and whatever work had to be done.
Was it any different from the farm work you were used to in Germany?
Yeah, well, there was the owner's son. It was different, you know. So
it was harder then?
Yes. I mean, here in Germany, I had horses to ride. In Scotland, I could use the governor's car because I'd already passed my driving test. Whilst I was unemployed in Glasgow,